You are listening to Do You Believe in Magic on OTG and Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Be sure to follow us on iTunes by searching Do You Believe in Magic and subscribe today.
All right, guys, welcome into the newest edition of the Do You Believe in Magic podcast. My name is Zach Oliver, sitting in for Dad. We kicked him out for the week. The kids are taking over with a very special guest, the unfortunately newly free agent of the internet who's now looking for more work. If you have work, hire this man because he is good with the words. It's Chris Barnwell, formerly of CBS Sports, Rufus on Fire. Oh, man. Anywhere on the internet. Chris, how are you tonight?
Special guest? I mean, wait, let's not raise
what
their
an
hopes
intro.
Up here. Let us not raise their hopes up here. By the way, okay. I am
fine. I hope nobody hires Chris.
I can my very first job was at a grocery store, and it took me a good 2 months to figure out where everything was. People would ask me where stuff was, and I'd be like, that's a good question.
Was this at a Publix by any chance?
It was Target. It was a super Target.
Ooh, watch out.
Oh, which, okay. By the way, let's throw Target under the bus here. I got trained to do cashier once. I got hired for seasonal stuff. I got trained to do cashier once, and then they scheduled me for Black Friday.
Oh, God.
Damn.
Why would you ever schedule someone who's only done cashier once in their entire time with training to do Black Friday? I personally would go find cashier shifts just so that way I wouldn't want to cry on Black Friday and like not have any idea what I was doing.
Oh man. Well, if you don't follow Chris already on Twitter, you can follow him at Chris Barnwell. In the background there, you heard one of our usual suspects, Will Ogburn, who is still probably stuck in Atlanta traffic somewhere. You can follow Will on Twitter at Go So Hard. William, how do you feel about the Braves? I'm kidding. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's raining here today, so people actually remembered how to drive. That was really exciting. Actually got home pretty nicely today. Can't complain, man. Just another day making memes.
And Aaron Goldstone, as always, here. Aaron, you're back from Maine, back in the humidity of Florida. Welcome back first. We hope you had a great vacation, but we're sorry that you had to come back to this hellhole.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. I kind of feel like Will and I are like in a divorced marriage relationship here.
Apparently, I didn't pay the phone bill.
Preston, and two with Preston. We have to share our weekend as he does now, but I'm good. I have 13 days.
It sounds
you're going through a tunnel, sir.
We might be having some difficulties with
Dang it, Aaron. This is what happens when you give old people the internet.
Ow. Man, Will coming out firing early, unlike the Magic from three-point range this season, probably. But
nah, man, they're running the Reddit four people surrounding one shooter offense this year. You don't get that much size without running that. I'm sorry.
Well, Chris, your last column for CBS was fittingly Power Rankings, which I believe you took over from Matt Moore when he left, correct?
I took over them a little bit before he left, but yeah, I was the one running them all season.
So you had the Magic, I believe you had them at 26th?
That's actually an improvement over where they were 27th, and they were last place at the beginning of free agency. So they impressed me enough to raise up a little.
So what was your rationale with putting them at 27th in your overall power rankings?
Well, considering it was an improvement over 30th, I'll tell you why they were 30th initially before free agency started. Initially, I considered them in the worst situation in the NBA as far as the fact that they had nowhere to go. They were full of veterans who just weren't really helping out much. They're young guys. We didn't really know anything about them. We weren't even sure if Aaron Gordon was going to stay. We weren't sure if guys were going to get better. I mean, we're kind of hopeful about Jonathan Isaac. We're somewhat hopeful about Bamba. People want Gordon to be good, but we don't know if he's going to be good. he's already good. We don't know how good he's going to be. And right. It's just this situation where it's like, where are they going? Do they really? The new front office they needed to find a direction to take the team in, and we didn't know where in the world that was going to be. It felt like they were just kind of winging it. It wasn't comforting. And then they went to the offseason. They shockingly traded Biombo. I know Mozgov's contract isn't exactly incredible by any means, but you can honestly make the argument that Mozgov's a better fit than Biombo is. They re-signed Gordon to a very team-friendly deal. It's front-loaded, so if for whatever reason the pairing doesn't work out, you can trade him at a later date. I like the smaller moves they made, just kind of filling out the roster. I don't think they did anything too dangerous. I don't think they did anything that was going to hurt them long-term. I am pretty comfortable with the moves they made. I thought they're not in a great position, but they're in a better position, and I thought that should kind of reward them in that sense, from going from the worst situation in the NBA to probably about the same situation as like the Bulls or Suns, where, hey, you can maybe see a future there now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's probably right around the mark that I would put them at after the majority of offseason has passed, because I think that overall, I think they made some smart moves, but you know, I feel like generally speaking, their offseason to some extent was a little underwhelming. Aaron, in the scope of just the Eastern Conference, where do you kind of see the Magic fitting in there in the power rankings now?
Probably just kind of on the fringe and outside of in the playoffs, but I'm actually a little bit more bullish maybe than some folks. You know, I think they had a pretty solid summer because, you know, they didn't really have a lot to work with free agency wise, you know, the mid-level exception and then, you know, some minor, you know, money to work with. But just internally, organically, you know, the team's going to improve because Jonathan Isaac missed so much time last year. You know, bringing Isaac in the fold with Bamba, that combination is almost like bringing two lottery picks in if you kind of view Isaac's year last year as a redshirt year, so to speak. And then I think Clifford, it'll be interesting to see, but you know, his style of coaching might actually improve the Magic a little bit as well, because he puts such a value on rebounding and getting back on defense. And I think you're going to see the Magic, who are one of the worst rebounding teams in the NBA last year, if not the worst, improve a little bit in that department, improve in the department of not fouling the opposing team so much. And so you're not giving away 3 points at the free throw line. Clifford teams are notorious for getting back on defense. You're not giving up easy buckets in transition. So I think I see the defense improving a lot. Like Chris said, minor improvements. You know, Jarrell Martin, I think depth-wise, will help. Jerian Grant is maybe going to be a slight upgrade value play over, like, a Shelvin Mack as a backup point guard. So, you know, nothing major, but, you know, I don't think it's out of the question to think the Magic could be somewhere in, like, the 10-11 spot in the East, which is just a couple slots better than where they've been, but still a little bit improved.
I think the thing with Clifford, the Clifford effect, that is actually a very real thing, considering he took a Charlotte team that was generally the same roster that had won like 23 games or something ridiculous like that the year before, to a massive rise to actually making the playoffs in his first year with the Bobcats. If in honor of the NBA, RIP Bobcats, in honor of the NBA partnering with MGM today, if you are going a gambling type, stay away from Orlando, because Steve Clifford is probably going to make their roster play way better than you expect it to. So while I'm very low on them in terms of like how I feel about them right now, I will probably bump them up as far as wins and losses go a little more, because I don't see Clifford being the tanking type. But I am curious if he's going to have the talent on the roster to make it get to that 10-win range that you feel that they can be, because even with some really bad Hornets teams, he still had the talent of a point. He still had a point, a level of talent there to where he was at least able to get wins out that I'm not sure the Magic really have. He had an Al Jefferson. He had a Kemba Walker. He had a Nicholas Batum. In Orlando, all he has is a still rising, still getting better Aaron Gordon, which maybe Gordon has his blowout season with Clifford, and that's where it really comes together. Maybe this, and there is value to having a system that just teams consistently play to. That is honestly one of those things that nothing gets you more regular season wins than playing to a consistent system. You see it with the Spurs all the time. It's why Steve Clifford teams are typically better than they should be. It's like they have a system that works and they get wins out of it. But again, I'm very questionable on the talent. So for the gambling types, stay away from this team, whatever over under they're set at. Just don't bother.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Chris. Oh, we'll go ahead. Sorry, you're more important.
My bad. Chris, let me ask you this. Because Chris covered the Hornets before his current gig. And like that's why you were the first person I hit up whenever Clifford got hired. The question a lot of Magic fans have been having is how the new guys are going to balance with the veterans. How has Steve Clifford really handled young talent in the past?
Okay. No one get mad about this. Vucevic is going to play over Bamba to start the season, and he's going to play a lot of minutes over him to start the season.
Right. I think that's what we all kind of expected.
It's going to happen. People are going to be very upset about it. Young guys are not going to play very much at the beginning of the year. Clifford doesn't hate rookies. He expects a lot out of them. He expects you, especially defensively, to be at an NBA level from day one. If you aren't, you're just not going to play much. That doesn't mean it's never going to happen. We saw last year with Malik Monk, it never happened in Charlotte, and he didn't get to play. We also saw in Cody Zeller's very first year in the NBA, he started off the year not playing much, and by the end of the year, he was starting for an injured Al Jefferson and was one of their first big men off the bench. Some of that was necessity. Some of that was just Zeller had improved over the course of the season, and he had finally started to understand Clifford's system. So as far as young guys go, if they play to what he wants, if they're trying on defense, if they're fitting to the system, he will play them. But veterans are always going to get veterans just by being in the NBA longer and understanding how things work more are going to play more initially. And that's going to make a lot of people angry because a lot of people are going to be in this boat of, I don't care. I want to see the young guys improve, but young guys have to earn their minutes, especially with Clifford.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting thing to look at, especially with Mo Bamba, because I feel like him along with Trae Young or the two guys in the draft that clearly had an NBA ready skill, and Bamba's is obviously his rim protection. So how much will Clifford value that over, maybe the offensive production and what you get from Vucevic on that end versus what Bamba can do defensively is going to be very interesting to kind of watch develop, especially early in the season. I do tend to agree with Chris. I don't think that Mohamed Bamba is going to get a ton of time early in the year, but as the season progresses, and especially after the Magic most likely move on from Nikola Vucevic at the trading deadline, we'll see them kind of really turn to giving Mo Bamba the reins at center. Will kind of playing off what Aaron and Chris were saying. Do you think that they've made enough moves, and that maybe the Eastern Conference as a whole has changed enough to where we could see the Magic really maybe fighting for that eighth spot in the Eastern Conference, or even hanging around ninth or tenth into, say, late March?
See, man, this is what happens when you don't show up to the podcast. We talked about this last week, but the thing is, the thing is, I think that the team has improved, and I think Chris makes a good point that this team isn't going to be tanking, I don't think, with Steve Clifford. So
the roster might be, he just won't be.
Yeah, right, but they won't be losing on purpose. They'll just be losing because they're bad. But the thing is, so many teams, I think, in the modern NBA are about tanking, and they're just shamelessly doing it, as we've seen it build teams like Philadelphia and other teams to be yet named. Well, the draft picks that would have resulted from tanking have built Boston, but they just didn't tank. Anyway, I think that as teams kind of start to fall out of the fray, Orlando could rise up. We always joke about that, about the late March runs that these teams would go on and beat these awful ghost crew teams. But I think it's all, as I said in the last podcast, I think it's all fool's gold. And I think that this team needs to be focused on getting fundamentally better. So I'm not really worried about our draft odds next year. Now, maybe if you check with me in March, I'll be freaking out about that if there's a big bundle of teams from 3 to 9. But I don't think that the draft odds are all that important, especially because the draft isn't that loaded next year.
And they're changing the system next year. It's going to be I don't remember the exact details, but basically being the worst team in the NBA is going to, your odds are still going to be the best, but they're not going to be as great as they used to be. It's going to be more spread out.
Exactly. So that all feeds into what I was saying, which is if you I'm not I'm kind of done rooting for the Magic to tank. What I want out of this year is for them to improve fundamentally. And if they're winning those games late in the year, like, that's fine at this point, because I mean, how many more lottery picks do they need? At this point, you kind of have what you have. Maybe there's one more year of really being bad, I think, but that's still going to be maybe like a top 10 pick. But if we're in the top three, something has gone catastrophically wrong.
You're going to love Steve Clifford fundamentally then, because that is the one thing he always had in Charlotte over anything. Like, the team, Charlotte was weird in that they were one of those teams. I don't know if they did three years in a row. They definitely did 2 years in a row. There was a 2 year in a row stretch where they had a positive net rating and still finished with a worse record than a winning record, because just that's the way life works out. But Steve Clifford and every single team he had, they were always just fundamentally sound, because Aaron mentioned it earlier. They rebound, they don't foul on defense. They played to a system, and that system worked. And that is something that you're going to see, maybe not early on, but eventually, because he will play the guys who play to his system. They will eventually be playing to his system and playing the way he wants them to play. At least defensively. Yeah. Offense, it might be a little weirder.
This team offensively is going to probably hurt a lot of eyes this season. Just kind
of so excited.
Glancing over the roster, though,
it's gonna be so bad.
You know, kind of playing off of what Chris was saying about, you know, the veterans playing. I guess it depends on what your definition of a veteran is. The Magic have of guys that likely factor into getting major minutes this season. The Magic have four players who have been in the league more than 5 years: Terrence Ross, Nikola Vucevic, DJ Augustine, and Evan Fournier. Everyone else has been in the league for 5 years or less.
Oh God, Terrence Ross is a veteran now? When did that happen?
Hey, it's a wild ride sometimes in Orlando, Will. but Aaron, kind of shifting to, building a little bit more off this broader view of the Eastern Conference. How do you think that some of the moves across the rest of the conference, really shakes things up? Obviously, LeBron James leaving completely changes the landscape. But, is it really Boston's conference to really lose now? Or do you think that Philadelphia or maybe even Toronto with Kawhi Leonard could really get in there and challenge them?
Boston kind of seems like the obvious, choice here, because they bring back so much from the roster that made a deep run last year, and that's even without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, of course. But, it might take a little bit for the Celtics to kind of get back rolling to, like, where they were last year, because you've got guys like Rozier and even Tatum and Brown that were playing larger roles than they will when Hayward and Irving come back 100%. So they're going to have a little bit of time gelling, but just talent wise, I mean, they're, in my opinion, head and shoulders above, the rest of the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia, for me, again, just not there yet. They're a top four team in the East. I love Embiid. I love Simmons, but, they have to get more shooting to surround those guys. JJ Redick's like perfect for them and what they're trying to do, but they lost Marco Bellinelli and didn't really replace him. They lost Ilyasova and didn't really replace him. And so I think, they're still a couple moves away from really contending. Toronto, they kind of swung for the fences with the Leonard trade, but that, remains to be seen how that works out. I've got to see that play out. So for now, I really like Boston. You kind of feel like Washington has maybe one more run before they break up the Wall Beal backcourt.
I'm so out on Washington.
And Milwaukee, they've got a brand new head coach. So the East is all at this point, I think, all the teams catching up to Boston, but you never know. You never know what kind of serious injuries could change the landscape.
Yeah. I think that the top three, I think you can put them in any order. Boston, Toronto, and then Philadelphia in the East. That 4-7 range is kind of, I think, where there's going to be a lot of interest. Chris, is there a team in there, that probably Indiana, Washington, Milwaukee, maybe even Cleveland still, that kind of grouping there that you could see taking that step and maybe pushing those top three teams?
Milwaukee, without question, my opinion would be Milwaukee. I want to say Indiana just because I like Victor Oladipo. I liked how they pushed Cleveland in the first round last year. But Indiana is very much a show me, let me see it again type of team just because of how much of a surprise they were last year, how they had a lot of guys you didn't expect to be good, have these great years. While Milwaukee, we've been seeing them on the cusp of being something good for so long, who's just been poorly coached from Jason Kidd. They have an excellent coach in Mike Budenholzer, someone who's going to have them play to a system that is going to benefit Antetokounmpo so much. And speaking of Antetokounmpo, Giannis is
yoked.
He is going to be so good with space and the fact that he's the type of player where, remember that year in 2007 when LeBron brought the Cavs to the NBA Finals basically by himself?
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is the type of player that has that kind of potential, and he has better help around him, in my opinion. Chris Middleton is very good. I love adding Brook Lopez. That Milwaukee team, I don't put them in the same tier as Boston, Toronto, and Philadelphia, but I can see them crashing it and being very good in it because of just, again, we were talking earlier about how, with the Magic, with Steve Clifford as his teams play to a system. Mike Budenholzer also has his teams play to a system. They play good defense, and they shoot a lot of three-pointers. I don't know if the offense is going to transition into Milwaukee exactly like that, but they will play defense, and they will play defense well in Milwaukee, and that is going to make them very dangerous.
Yeah, if they got Giannis out here shooting threes, it is over, bro.
Well, he doesn't need to shoot threes, which is the crazy part. He just gets to the rim in two steps.
Right, fair.
I do think that the spacing with Milwaukee is going to be a little bit of an issue. Obviously, Chris Middleton is criminally underrated across the league, I think, especially as a 3-and-D guy.
But what's weird about them is Atlanta has been, for years, a three-point shooting team that can't shoot threes.
Yeah.
So it's not like Mike Budenholzer can't do that in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, if you lined up Paul Millsap and Giannis and just stuck him in the spot and said, hey, horse, who wins? Who knows?
Millsap's going to win.
Paul Millsap.
I know, I'm kidding. But it's not like they have great three-point shooters.
Will, after that kind of mid-range group there in the East, is there a team that you look at that might be fighting for that 7-8 seed, your Miami's? Oh, God. Probably Cleveland's down there.
Yo, Miami is, really low-key interesting. So you guys talked about this, a lot of interesting teams. Obviously, Toronto's really interesting. Milwaukee's really interesting. Miami is, it's like Pat Riley just, did a coke bender for 2 years and just, decided to just, sign all these guys that he would never sign ever before. His, whole tenure of NBA life. Pat Riley the player wouldn't have signed these guys. And, because I was one of my best friends as a Heat fan, and I was, talking to him the other day. He's like, no, dude, our books aren't that bad. And I was like, dude, you have one guy who's at market value, and it's Josh Richardson. Everyone else is literally, just over. It's like they held a gun to his head when he was signing every deal on that roster. But the thing is, they weren't bad last year. They were, the fifth seed, and a lot of guys were hurt. The man himself, Deion Waiters, man, he was gone for most of the year, and a lot of their run the year before was due to him being actually good. So they're like a cluster. I'm not sure. They might be the victim of some of these teams getting better. Detroit, another cluster. What's going to happen there? We don't really know anything about what their – I mean, maybe I just don't. Maybe I'm ignorant, but about what their philosophy is going to be going forward without Stan. But it's you look at a team like that in theory should have more talent on the roster than a team like Miami, and they have – they're directionless. They're out of the ship. So it's that little tier is low-key interesting as well.
Yeah, Miami is that NBA purgatory where they just don't have a chance to compete. They're not a title contender, even a conference final contender, but they're also not a lottery franchise. They're just good enough to be barely relevant, which is not where you want to be while paying Kelly Olynyk a lot of money and then random guys like that.
James Johnson, Tyler Johnson is still getting paid a lot of money. I mean, Miami, I feel like Miami as a unit, oddly is very cohesive, especially with Goran Dragic kind of leading the charge there. I look at them as being a team that maybe can make a little bit of noise, not you know, really make a big run in the East, but might push one of those top four teams in a seven game series. The other team that I look at is Detroit. I think that Detroit's really interesting. You know, we get an offseason with Blake Griffin there. Maybe this is the year that they finally make the move and take that step forward. Obviously, Reggie Jackson is an issue. And
he's also been hurt the last 2 years.
Yeah.
The year they made the playoffs, he was healthy.
Yeah. I mean, if he can stay healthy, you know, who knows what could happen. But I think that team is an interesting team. And call me crazy. I already know it's going to come. The Knicks interest me.
No, I mean, they have a great player. Like
The Knicks interest me solely because...
Well, he's going to be out for a while.
You know, of Kristaps Porzingis, you know, when
but
he
But they have Mario Hezonja. Why do you need Kristaps Porzingis? Might as well trade him now while the value is still high. So,
I'm interested to see how Porzingis returns from his knee injury and, you know, the kind of impact he can have on them once he does get back, because you can make the argument that he's one of the top four or five players in the Eastern Conference now. I mean,
I would need to think about it.
That's like being the tallest little person, I guess, but yeah, I'd say he's top five.
Well, let's see. We have Giannis, Kyrie, there now.
Embiid,
Kawhi, Joel Embiid. Who else in the Eastern
Kyrie?
Conference are you?
Kyrie Irving, probably Gordon Hayward.
Might not even be top five. Ooh. Bad.
Do you put Gordon Hayward,
if he's if he doesn't have any issues from his leg injury, I'm going to believe in more than a knee injury on a big man.
Fair.
That's fair. John Wall. You have to think about John Wall.
Hey, man, Blake Griffin's over here now.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin might be better than him still. Porzingis is very close to being that one man wrecking crew that is just makes a team really, really good. And I will give him this. The Knicks, the bottom tier, the bottom half of the Eastern playoffs last year was just this giant cluster of teams. It was Miami, Milwaukee, Washington. And for a while it had Detroit, Charlotte, and New York there before Porzingis got hurt, and New York just kind of embraced the whole, all right, we're terrible, let's just let this thing fall apart kind of thing.
It appears we are, in fact, the Knicks. See you guys later.
Yes. So, and eventually someone has to lose games, and that team ended up being the Knicks once Porzingis went down. But so I will give them credit. They were in the bottom part of it, but they were in that, like, that group of teams that were just all clustered together as far as wins and losses went. It made doing power rankings all season one heck of a experiment, because you'd have a team lose one game and they would fall five spots because everyone else didn't lose that week for whatever reason. Just that's how severely close the East was at points. So I'll give Porzingis that, but knee injuries always bother me. Not because, I mean, we're kind of past the point now to where they ruin careers, but guys come back from them slowly and it takes a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think I worry about the Gordon Hayward injury just because of
mental stuff.
Well, I don't even know if it's mental stuff. It's just how gruesome it was. And I mean,
well, it was a broken leg, so as far as physically goes, it shouldn't impede him. You always hear stories about these guys who, like, they have these horrid injuries attacking the rim, and just they're not all the way there when they get back. Like, they're a little, not scared, but they drive in, and just it's hard to, like, they're hesitant.
Yeah, I think that we saw that maybe not a lot, but a little bit with Paul George. I think Paul George has finally kind of overcome that.
I want to say he talked about that, actually. I can pull it up now.
Probably did. But I think that that's just going to be interesting. You know, the East lost possibly the greatest player to ever play the game. And the storylines are just, you know, obviously everyone's talking about the Western Conference, but honestly, some of the Eastern Conference storylines are still pretty riveting, because, I mean, what does Cleveland do now? Can John Wall and Bradley Beal finally push Washington to the next level? Does Philadelphia go? How do they continue to grow? How does Kawhi Leonard fit in Toronto? And does he stay in Toronto after one season, kind of like Paul George did in Oklahoma City? is Victor Oladipo's season kind of a fluke, or is he for real? And is he going to continue to take that next step forward? You know, they're not as big and as broad, I think, as some of the Western Conference storylines, but I still think that there's a lot of interesting storylines in the Eastern Conference. Will, is there one that really kind of grabs your attention?
Oh, I mean, I think the Eastern Conference is infinitely more interesting than the Western Conference, because at the end of the day, it's like we kind of know what's going to happen in the Western Conference. And like, I mean, in the East, like, you're right, maybe one of those teams just catches fire. We saw it happen a couple years ago with Washington when they started off like something like 2-11, and they just were incredible the rest of the year. They had like a great month and a half, and then they were average. Like, any of these teams, you could tell me in, you know, 5-6 months from now, oh, wow, this is the team that's really good. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, unless it's like Miami. But like any other of those other teams, like I said, even if Detroit gets the right coaching hire, they have enough talent to be dangerous, because there isn't really a dominant team in terms of like talent. Maybe it's Boston, but again, we haven't seen those guys play together yet. That Gordon Hayward has never played really with Kyrie Irving. Kawhi, I mean, could be the best player in the East, or he could still be hurt. It's like it's all across the gamut. So, I mean, I think that it's sneaky. Like, it went the totally the other way, like last offseason, where all these players went from East to West, and it was like, well, the East is going to be no fun this year because LeBron's just going to rule it and like kill Toronto and do whatever. But now it's like, no, like, I think the Eastern Conference playoffs, they showed us last year that, like, even though we kind of like in the back of our heads thought LeBron was going to win, the Eastern Conference playoffs were phenomenal last year. And I think they're going to be even better this year without LeBron to ultimately put the dagger in there.
It's funny that you mentioned how the East is kind of more interesting in that sense than the West, because I think there's storylines in both conferences that makes everyone interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff out West, like how are the Rockets going to do after letting their best defenders leave? How are the Blazers going to respond to the fact that they just got embarrassed in the playoffs last year? And
speak on it.
a bunch of teams came back. What are the Clippers doing? Are the Lakers going to be any good? Or like, how are the
Spurs? Can Anthony Davis continue to carry the Pelicans? And, you know,
right. There's all kinds of interesting storylines. But as far as like the overall like teams going, I don't think anyone disagrees the West as a whole kind of got better just because LeBron left to go to Los Angeles. But at the same time, it spread out the conference more, but it didn't make it more dangerous for the Warriors. The Warriors are still the best team, and the Rockets got worse.
Yeah, the Rockets got worse,
and the Warriors got better.
We're talking about that,
and the Warriors potentially got better if DeMarcus Cousins is healthy. We don't know yet, because that's the most devastating injury you can have in basketball. But the Warriors potentially got better, and the Rockets got worse.
Well, all he has to be better than is like JaVale McGee, right?
Sorry.
All DeMarcus has to be better than is like JaVale McGee for them to be better.
Right, but that's a different kind of play. Those are different kind of players.
Right. But I don't know. Even if he's a shell of himself, I feel like he's still talented enough to where they got better, I guess. I don't know.
He is, but JaVale McGee did have a pretty decent impact on that team, surprisingly.
Well, right. That's because they made his role as simple as possible. Block shots on defense, run at the rim on offense, and dunk it. Which, hey, it worked.
Hey, but even a blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes.
What's interesting to me about the West, though, is like, okay, so the Rockets got worse. So who in the eternal question of, okay, who's going to challenge the Warriors? Well, the Thunder, what'd they do? They ran it back and they traded Carmelo Anthony. All right. They added Dennis Schroeder. That's not helpful at all. What about the Jazz? They ran it back. They're expecting Donovan Mitchell to get better. That's their hope. They're going to hope that young players help them improve, which continuity is a good thing. What the Pelicans do? They're relying on continuity. They're hoping that second half run where Anthony Davis was perennially the guy who's questionable to return. He just had an injury every freaking night. That's going to be their entire season. That's a little concerning. The Spurs? I'm a DeRozan guy. I think he's good. I don't think they got worse in the sense that they just traded a guy who played only 9 games last year and they won 47 for a guy who's, in my opinion, a legitimately good player. I think there are legitimate concerns with the Spurs as a whole, but I don't think they got worse, but I also don't think they got improved enough to the point where they're going to compete with the Rockets. The Wolves, apparently their best players are feuding with each other. The Nuggets, they still need to make the playoffs. The Lakers added LeBron, but they also added Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee, and who was the other guy?
Beasley.
Michael Beasley. Beasley, yeah, Michael Beasley. Paisley.
So there's a network out there somewhere that's missing an opportunity to do sort of like a last chance you that Netflix does with JUCO. The Lakers, you know, don't even focus on LeBron because he gets enough attention, but all the other guys, like, just follow around Rondo and Stevenson and McGee and Beasley, and like that is literally like last chance LA. Like it would be like the number one show on Netflix. Like Hulu needs to get on that.
Rajon Rondo will only give them 5 minutes.
We need to
Lonzo Ball's dad. Like that show would be incredible.
I've had enough of that show. That show needs to be canceled.
Yeah, we need to get a
but just interacting with all those guys.
Oh no, what they need to do is just leave a roster spot open, like going into camp every year, and then just call a bunch of randos, like, I don't know, Gilbert Arenas, like a couple guys from the big three, and be like, because LeBron, they're not going to see minutes, and he can make anybody great, but it's like, this is your chance. It's like American Idol. It's like, you got to have a meeting with LeBron, and you, like, he's sitting down in the room, and you come in, and you're like, hey, LeBron, I make really good cookies. And he's like, okay, that's dope. I can do that. Hey, LeBron, I can teach you origami. All right, well, that's cool, man. Hey, LeBron, like, I'll babysit your kids for free. I don't know, kind of got that handled. I think that would be a good show.
I think that we need to get an NBA version of Hard Knocks and send it out to LA. Because
that's cool.
I think that just, you know, watching that team would be extremely interesting.
And they got to bring Nick Young in, so then it'll be the all-time meme team.
Aaron, is there a storyline that kind of piques your interest across the league right now?
I think you guys touched on most of them. You know, I guess Chris, since he's our special guest, I'll throw this one at him. I know he covered the Raptors a lot last year. You know, obviously they had the best season, you know, they've ever had in their franchise last year, but they, you know, still couldn't overcome one person. And as we all know, that one person is now gone. So, you know, did Toronto maybe possibly jump the gun, like, and not at least give their roster, DeRozan, Lowry, their massively improved bench, one more year to try to make a run in the East without LeBron James in the East? You know, to me, I thought that the one hurdle they couldn't overcome, you know, was now not in their path and in their way. And while Kawhi Leonard and healthy probably is a bigger impact player, there's just so much unknown. Plus, he's going to be a free agent. Like, was that move maybe jumping the gun a little bit, trading for Leonard?
I think what the Raptors did is they raised their ceiling very, very high, because when Leonard's healthy, he's a top five player. And right. I love DeMar DeRozan, but DeMar DeRozan is never going to be a top five player. He's not going to be that ever. But there are legitimate concerns with the fact that they fired their coach and they brought in a player who might not want to be there. They traded someone who's very happy there, and they made some roster changes in that sense where it could all backfire. But I think that's a worthy risk worth taking if you're Masai Ujiri, because he wants to make the Raptors a title contending team. And if that's your goal, then sometimes you have to get risky. You have to do something that can raise your ceiling to make them an even better team. But at the same time, it could all go horribly wrong, and they could end up not being as good as the Celtics or the Sixers, if that's just the way things pan out for them.
First year head coach too.
Right. Now, a lot of people speak the world of Nick Nurse. I know a former coworker of mine, James Herbert, was all in on him as a coach, but we'll need to see. But again, it's hard to not get over the fact that it's like you just promoted within, and you, like you said, you might have jumped the gun, but I think the potential of raising their ceiling is like it was a worthy risk worth taking.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with that. I do kind of question letting Dwayne Casey go, who obviously won Coach of the Year and took Toronto to that next level. But from a roster standpoint, I think that it's a risk worth taking to take on Kawhi Leonard. Even if you lose him after a year, then you move into a rebuild then. And for the price that you paid for Kawhi, I mean, DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl, that's hard to pass up for a guy who...
And they added Danny Green, who's not... I don't know if he's still good, but a lot of people are in on him. At least defensively, he's still good.
Yeah, and I mean, he can still knock down the three ball some, and I think he'll fit pretty well next to Kyle Lowry in that backcourt. So I like what Toronto did. It's just, you know, I agree with Chris. It raises their ceiling. It probably, you know, lowers their floor a little bit just because of the continuity that you lose with trading DeMar DeRozan and also a guy who just might not want to be there. But they're another really interesting team in the Eastern Conference. Chris, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. You were telling us a good story before we started that I think you need to, I think that you could share with everybody about Steve Clifford and how he worked with a former Magic great.
I'm not sure I can actually tell that. That was a story. Okay. I said beforehand.
He told you beforehand he couldn't tell the story.
Yeah, it tells you.
Chris, what? You're killing us. Okay, it's fine, Chris. It's just like Will's story that he wouldn't tell us about a month ago. So
once more, the exact same thing happened to me.
I can tell you a funny story about me and Clifford.
Oh, well, sure. We'll take a funny story about you and Clifford.
This was like my second summer league ever when I was still trying to like kind of figure out how to be like an NBA journalist type. I was still just a blogger at the time. And I was standing against the wall in the Magic's practice arena waiting for the next game or that game to end or the next game to start or whatever. And I turned to my right and there's Steve Clifford. And I had one of those, yeah, this is really cool moments. And I was sitting there. And then I realized after like a minute, I was like, I'm staring at Steve Clifford right now. This is really awkward. And then he noticed me staring at him. And it was even more awkward. And I was like, well, shit. It's like, this is not, I was like, this is going to be a very awkward situation. I hope I don't have to talk to him later or that he doesn't remember my face. But he was very nice about it and did not seem to look at me like I was a crazy person when he should have.
Now he probably thinks you're stalking him.
Oh, 100%. Hey, he came to Orlando when I was already here. He's stalking me.
That's fair.
He saw these beautiful eyes and just could not get away from them.
To be fair, you're in Melbourne, not in Orlando.
Fair point.
Okay. Transitioning off of Chris being awkward, we're going to go ahead and wind this down now with a new fun segment. Will, we'll go ahead and start with you. Are you angry about anything today?
Well, thank God both of the days that we've had like this segment, I've just gotten in like a random uncharacteristic NBA Twitter argument, which is great. But
you
today
Twitter arguments? Never.
Hey man, listen. No, like
only about SEC football.
But today
you see national champions.
Oh my God, bro. See, this is, you gotta embrace it. Aaron is like QCF and he just like takes pictures. You gotta really own it. Like, I'll be part of the meme for sure. Anyway, so
national champs.
Anyway, so the thing that gets me is like Magic fans, and I talked about this a little bit with Mario, but Magic fans kind of over mourning players that are gone. And I got to this today with Oladipo. It's like, I don't think people understand that if Oladipo had stayed in Orlando, he wouldn't be what he is now. He needed to leave. He needed to spread his little Oladipo wings, get out there in the world, and become a better person. Everything that he says is about how him getting traded twice made him into the player he is. He didn't just randomly wake up and decide like, oh, I'm going to be good now. Like, he was doing things a certain way in Orlando. And then his whole life changed multiple times. And then he got a new trainer. He refocused himself. He lost like 20 pounds or whatever, cut down all of his muscle mass. But I don't know. I was talking to this guy today who was saying that Oladipo, like the Magic traded away like the best two guard of his generation and Victor Oladipo. And I was like, well, first off, that's insane. But second, like, he couldn't have been that here. Like, he would have just been what he was here, which is a little bit of like the butt of Magic fans' rage, because it seemed like he was never going to live up to the billing of what we knew or thought that he could be eventually. And he's there now, but it's like, I think that people just got to have a happy breakup. And at the end of the day, like, you know, like, you know, if we're like the kind of ugly guy who broke up with a really hot girl that was out of his league and kind of watched her get even hotter. And it's like, well, just be happy for her, man, because it's gone.
Yeah, I don't think that Victor Oladipo would have become half the player that he was last season if he'd stayed in Orlando. I think his year with Russell Westbrook was monumental for him taking that next step. Chris, is there anything that you're mad about today?
I wasn't, and then I saw a tweet being quote tweeted by my good friend Patrick Fenlon about boneless wings. Look, I am so tired of this whole like fake manhood BS with like people like, oh, I don't eat boneless wings. They're not called boneless wings anyways. They're nuggets or whatever. Look, if you want to call them nuggets, fine. Quit pretending you're a better person or like a more masculine man with the fact that you don't order, that you never get wings boneless, or like you only eat them on the bone. Chicken is one of God's gifts to us. Chicken is an incredible thing that you can do so much incredible, delicious food related items to. Just appreciate it. If you want to go get boneless wings because you want something that's not going to be as messy because maybe you have to go to work later, but you really want that buffalo flavor, get your boneless wings and be happy about them. Do not let society and their fake masculine, oh, if you don't get this wing on the bone, you're like a fake person. BS lets you shy away from those boneless wings. Eat boneless wings to your heart's content, America.
Wow, that was passionate. And you know, I know Chris is a fan of wings. The two of us have gone to all-you-can-eat wings at Gators Dockside a few times. One of them being after a great day of summer league basketball, where
you ate like 40.
I showed up and ordered a pitcher of beer that nobody knew was even available, and ate more wings than everybody else. And it was a good time. Will, were you there? I think you were.
I think he was.
I went to one of them, yeah.
But also, for all you boneless wing fans, if you're in the Orlando area, and you don't know, Gators Dockside does all-you-can-eat boneless wings and french fries on Wednesday nights. So shout out to Gators Dockside, who should become a sponsor for this podcast.
I was about to say, that's what Zach's dreams look like, man. Get sponsored, get those Gators Dockside checks, and just be eating wings all day.
Yeah, you know, there's a Gators Dockside here locally that's nowhere near as good as any of the ones in Orlando. The service is terrible, and I just don't understand it. It makes me so sad.
Drag them, Chris.
I was so happy when I moved back here and saw that they were there, and then I went there a few times. I was like, the service here is awful. I was like, what is this? Give me my good Gators. I'm so disappointed.
So I wasn't – I'm going to go ahead and go. I'm going to let Aaron wrap us up after this, but I wasn't too mad about anything really. And then – I really started thinking, you know, the Major League Baseball trade deadline was today, and there was a slew of deals. From the All-Star game where we saw Manny Machado get traded to up until 4 o'clock where Jonathan Scope got traded to the Milwaukee Brewers, there were trades happening. I mean, everybody was active. One team was slightly more active than the others. The Baltimore Orioles, Manny Machado, Zach Britton, Darren O'Day, Kevin Gausman, Jonathan Scope, Brad Brock.
How dare you disrespect LSU great Kevin Gausman like that?
I'm sorry. The Orioles are a disgrace. I'm a Red Sox fan, so, you know, hating on another American League East team is natural, but it's borderline disgusting what the Orioles did. I mean, they sold their entire franchise, and really, they didn't get that many high-level prospects back. They're going to go straight into tanking mode. They're going to waste away the rest of Adam Jones's career, and you know, this was the first time in a while that they really had a cohesive unit that fans could see them build something with, and they threw it away. I mean, maybe they'd reached their limit with them, and they weren't going to go any higher than they did. But to just completely sell your franchise, I get it. They're like a 26-win team right now. I completely understand why you're doing it, but don't do that to your fans. Don't trade every single, you know, every single player and everything that your fan base has to look forward to. Don't trade it all within a matter of 2 weeks. That's just disrespectful to the fans that continue to pay money, continue to go out to your games, and watch you lose night after night after night after night. You know, you have to do what you have to do, but you know, show a little bit more respect to your fans and try to keep somebody and build. Aaron, I know you're going to be passionate about yours.
Things that you stay mad about on a daily basis. The Baltimore Orioles are a thing like 1,005 I would think that you'd be mad about. But.
Yeah. It's just so bad. I mean, they really started the trading deadline and they ended it. It seemed fitting, but it was also really disappointing to see them just blow everything up. I could have ranted about the St. Louis Cardinals trading Tommy Pham for one of my employees at work, but that wasn't that important to me. Aaron, we were talking about this beforehand a little bit. You have something that you're very passionate about tonight. Let's go ahead.
As the podcast has been expanding and we're getting a little bit more regular, I thought it'd be a good idea to have this segment about what you're mad about so we can kind of vent a little bit and you guys can get a little flavor of our personalities. And so if you want to check back last episode, Will and I got into a couple of things. I kind of went off on our fan base, Orlando's fan base, and their negative, I think, biases sometimes towards Nikola Vucevic. And Will went off a little bit about his own stance. So I'm going to go a different direction tonight and not talk about the Orlando Magic, but I traveled quite a bit yesterday. It's not an easy trek to get home from Maine to Florida, and I had a couple layovers and so forth, but American Airlines was actually fantastic. There was some awful weather in Boston. We had some flights canceled. They got us home. My thing that I'm mad about today are people, specifically people getting on right. and off of an airplane. As you all know, because we all have flown, or the way that you board an airplane now is they call you by zone. They announce it and it's on the screen and everything. I get so angry, especially traveling with two little ones, where people stand in line and stand in the way where you can't get on the airplane when they're waiting for their zone to be called. And your zone has been called. You do this weird limbo where you don't know if they're in line or if they're just standing there waiting. It's the biggest cluster I've ever seen in my life. So that absolutely drove me crazy. And the other thing is people getting off the airplane. Like when everybody stands up and tries to get in the aisle, and there's obviously this predetermined social norm of you wait and exit by row, or you can scream and yell, I'm late, I'm gonna miss my plane, and maybe I'll let you through. But the people that try to come from behind me and get off the plane before I can get up, that absolutely drives me crazy. And so people flying, getting on and getting off of an airplane is what I'm mad about today.
That's kind of like people at amusement parks. And living in Florida, I think we know that all too well. People just lack common courtesy these days. And I've only flown a couple of times in my life. I've never had to do a connection flight. But man, Aaron, I can hear it in your voice. I can hear the wrath. I can hear the anger. As we turn Aaron into a robot again.
You guys got me? Yep. Oh, now we got you.
Go. Yeah, I'm doing my dad duties right now. I'm actually at Sam's Club, but I'm trying to buy like a crap ton of stuff that we don't need. But
bro, listen here, man. You're at Sam's Club right now. Chris is out here quote tweeting Florida man stuff. We're all over the place right now. Okay.
Yo, that guy's gator is legit. Brought a gator to a liquor store.
only in Florida are you going to find somebody taking a gator into a liquor store.
I'm just waiting for the Scooby-Doo reveal where like one day Aaron just takes off his mask and he's actually Larry David.
Oh, man. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. Aaron, obviously it's the dog days of summer. Especially with the NBA.
Days, I call them, like, the vacation days, I need some rest days.
Yeah, it must be nice not having to have a job or anything.
It's wonderful.
Aaron, is there anything that you're working on, or are you just going to kind of take it easy here for the next couple of weeks and dive into the season preview stuff?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to just kind of slow it down a little bit. Obviously, I have school starting in a couple of weeks, and I'm actually
studying to take a certification test to become an administrator at some point. So I've got a lot going on professionally. So basketball is going to be kind of a backseat for just a few weeks until we kick it back up.
Yeah, and as always, guys, you can follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Goldstone. Will, are you making us any good memes?
Yeah, man, I'm working on some really cool, actually, behind-the-scenes stuff right now for one of our original shows called In the Cut. It's been super fun this week, man. I've been doing, like, because we have, like, a Western network and, like, an old-school comedy network, and we're looking at some, like, under wraps, like, cool shows we might be getting. But, yeah, I've actually been able to do some shootings. Look at this guy checking out in the middle of my monologue. The disrespect. But, yeah, man, no, it's been super fun. I can't complain.
Will, are you excited for SEC football to be starting up here soon?
I'm actually going to LSU Miami on September 2nd, and dude, doing this stuff as a fan and like drinking is gonna be great.
Yeah, and as always, you can follow Will on Twitter at GoSoHard. Obviously, the LSU roots are coming out of him. Chris, thank you for your gracious amount of time that you've given us tonight.
Got nothing but time these days.
I would ask you what you're working on, but you don't have a platform anymore.
I'm working on the Uncharted video game series right now on PlayStation. Those are some fun video games. That's what I've been working on lately. And these things called resumes. Lots of work into that.
Yes, that's one great thing. If you're into basketball and video games, Chris is the person I follow on Twitter. He tweets about games. I'm surprised he was probably live tweeting the what ESPN had on.
You Overwatch League Finals? Heck yeah, I was.
Yep.
Dang it. I was going to let him flounder out there and try to explain what that was.
I should have done this.
Look.
Beyblades? What were they playing?
I knew what they were playing. I just couldn't think of it right there. And like I mentioned earlier, you can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Barnwell. Again, my name is Zach Oliver. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach Oliver NBA. I will likely be tweeting about golf this weekend because Tiger Woods is going to win at the Bridgestone in Akron, or not the Bridgestone, Firestone Country Club, where he's won 8 times already. He's going to go ahead and cap it off there for his first win in what feels like too long. And we're going to end it on that point. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Do You Believe in Magic? And good night.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Do You Believe in Magic? If you like what you're hearing, take a moment to share with your friends, subscribe, and rate our podcast on iTunes today.